Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
Hello, Coleman.
Simona.
Hi, everybody.
Hi. Hello.
I got nothing, really.
That's seminar right there.
I think it's maybe just you and me. Lisa was going to, but I think she's otherwise engaged or something.
No, Lisa?
Oh, she is. Okay, I heard a rumor that she wasn't.
2 hours ago she was.
And it is 1 o'clock.
Can we... What do you want to see from the future?
Yeah, it's like, this is a more listening session.
Yeah.
All right, so we might as well get started. Lisa will perhaps join us in progress. And yeah, if you slide over, that way we start talking about the adventure.
I thought there was going to be more
I
people.
I can ring Vic into coming and talking to us. So, hi, I'm Eric Mona. I'm the publisher and chief creative officer of Paizo. And sitting to my left is...
I'm Jason Bolin. I'm the lead designer at Paizo.
So this seminar is one that we have done at PaizoCon since... I think actually literally since the first PaizoCon. As I was coming to walk to this seminar just now, thinking in my head, like, what should we talk about and stuff, it occurs to me that there was a Future of Paizo seminar with much higher production values last night at the banquet. and Lisa is here. So is there anyone in here who did not attend the banquet last night? A couple people. Okay. Good. All right. So we'll cover some somewhat familiar ground for some of you, but I think what we'll do is try to get a little bit more down into the details, and then leave some time at the end for Q&A. So if you guys have questions, we can try to answer specifically some of the stuff that you're curious about. On top of that, this is the Future of Paizo discussion, and you guys can help us to some degree determine the future of Paizo. So, if instead of a question you have a recommendation or something you'd like to see from us in terms of a product or really in terms of almost anything, we can, I have a pen and paper and we'll record that and maybe even do it. But before I get too far into it, let's let our new panelists introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Lisa Stevens, and I actually look forward to this panel every year because I know whether actually Paizo has a future, so I always come out here with a lot of relief,
Well, at least we got a bed.
Well, that's all.
We saw Doctor Who last night. Yeah.
Wait, no spoilers. The big thing I think that we should talk about just right off the bat, the big new thing for Paizo in 2017 is Starfinder. We've got demos of that going on here at the show. That was kind of the big announcement at the panel, or at the banquet last night, was that if you want the Delves, by registration, we've completely converted over to Starfinder. So that'll be going with Starfinder all today, up until the show ends at, I think, 2 o'clock tomorrow. So you can get a chance to actually sit down, roll some dice, and play. We've got the creative staff for Starfinder running games. They're all swapping out every couple hours, so you can just go up, and if there's an open seat, sit down, and otherwise just hang out, and they tend to run about 20 minutes, so there'll be an open seat shortly thereafter. Also, while I'm on the topic of Starfinder, I don't mean to be patronizing, guys, but did you know Starfinder is a science fiction role-playing game? So if I go too fast, stop me. But we also have in the store... some cool Starfinder stuff that we're showing off for the first time. There's a glass case in there that contains pretty much the only examples of Starfinder things that exist in the country. So we get what are called first bounds, and they're just like the first copies that come off the press, and they send them to us. So we have that of the Adventure Path, the Dead Sun's Adventure Path, and we've got... I think the GM screen is in there, and probably one of the flip mats. And so you can go check that out and actually see the Starfinder product. Oh, Plonset, yeah. But one of the things that's really, really cool that just went in there yesterday is our friends from Ninja Division, who are going to be doing pre-painted Starfinder miniatures. They brought a couple of the samples, like the early paint masters, for the iconic characters, and you can see what those are going to look like. I think they look spectacular. We just got our first look at them. Literally, they brought them to the show, and we're like, are these okay? And we're like, not only are they okay, put them in the case. So so you guys can check that out. So Starfinder evolved from the Pathfinder system. If you know how to play Pathfinder, you pretty much know how to play Starfinder. There are some differences to account for, you know, laser beams and jetpacks and all that kind of stuff. But if you know how to play Pathfinder, you know how to play Starfinder. Some of the things, like the skills, are different, you know, so you roll a d20, you add your skill ranks and your ability score modifier, so the way skill checks work is the same, but the types of skills are more, you know, like computers and things like that that fit better with the science fantasy milieu. I just want to say the word milieu. Yeah. So Starfinder launches officially in August at Gen Con and in game stores and on Paizo.com all at the same time. And so it's, I think, the August 18th, if I remember correctly, whatever the first day of Gen Con is. And we will be doing a lot of Starfinder stuff at Gen Con. So debuting at the same time as the Starfinder core rulebook and the first Dead Sons Adventure Path volume and the pawns and two flip mats and the miniatures. We're also going to be debuting the Starfinder Society Organized Play program. That is going to be a really exciting launch for Paizo. It will be the third iteration of our Pathfinder Society, the previous one being Pathfinder Adventure Card Guild, and then the original Pathfinder Role-Playing Guild, and this is a program called Starfinder Society, and it's you play members of the Starfinder Society, and as they explained a little bit last night in the banquet, unlike the Pathfinder Society, which has been around in-game for, you know, 1,000 years, and got well-established leadership and everything, at the beginning of the Starfinder Society campaign, the society itself has suffered like a serious setback where many of its top agents and leadership were mysteriously lost on an expedition. And so you're really kind of playing the people who are forging a new Starfinder society.
Next generation.
Yeah, kind of next generation. So it's not completely wiped out. There's still, you know, headquarters and some of the leaders are there, but it's really about kind of creating a new society. That should be pretty exciting for folks. What it means is that even like when your characters are third level, you know, you're kind of bigwigs in the society because they all are third level people, so you're not just following around someone else's orders. So we're going to be doing two scenarios for Starfinder Society every month. We brought Thurston Hillman in, who is one of our favorite freelancers and a big contributor to Pathfinder Society. He's working with Joe Compton and Linda Zeiss-Palmer to create content for the campaign. So Starfinder, like I said, launches in August. The path comes out every other month. So Starfinder's given us an opportunity to kind of experiment a little bit with, you know, format and frequency and stuff. So we're taking it a little more slowly than we do with Pathfinder. Maybe we'll ramp up speed if it becomes very, very, you know, popular. I just heard today that somebody was telling Jeff Alvarez, our operations, our chief operations officer, that after the banquet last night, they went in to the Gen Con event registration meeting. There were 6,000 people ahead of them in line, because I think that just opened or something. And they, if I'm getting this correct, by the time they were able to check out, there were like only three spots available for Starfinder games, period, at Gen Con.
I was actually ready at 9 a.m. this morning to click the button.
Yeah.
I clicked it right there, and they were all sold out by the time I got there.
Holy moly. So that's insane, right? Because there's tons of Starfinder tables at the show. One of the things that Gen Con does allow us to do, because we're co-sponsors of the show, is we can go in and readjust some of the tables. So if there are other things that aren't selling as strongly, and if indeed we are sold out of Starfinder tables, which... I mean, confirmation.
So someone told me, actually, all of our events sold out in 10 minutes. So someone told me this morning.
Well, guys, it's hopeless, I guess. I strongly suspect that story got mangled somehow and that was just Starfinder. But you never know. We cannot add more tables. We literally have the best organized play space at Gen Con. But we, in past years, have been able to shuffle some things around. So just if you are going to go to Gen Con and you don't have a Starfinder ticket because it looks like they're sold out, that might not actually be true. We may be able to ship some stuff around as time goes on. So
demos next to
them. Thank you, Vic. So, and you will, of course, be able to play demos of Starfinder at the convention. Anybody leaving PaizoCon on Monday and then flying directly to UK Games Expo in Birmingham, England on Tuesday, other than Jason?
Oh, yeah.
You get to play Starfinder demos there as well. We'll be running them. But the thing is, honestly, if you want to play Starfinder demo, just go over to registration because we're doing them here today and tomorrow as well. We will have the Starship Combat stuff being played and demoed at Gen Con, which we're not doing here.
Yeah.
Let's see. If I missed anything important for Starfinder... Yes, sir.
What about third-party developers
good question.
Support on Starfinder?
Some of them have announced.
Yeah.
Yes, we have a Starfinder compatibility license that you can sign up for. And basically what that does is it allows you to have a logo on your product that says this is compatible with Starfinder. Of course, Starfinder, like Pathfinder, is released under the Open Game license in general. So anybody and everybody can make material that is compatible with Starfinder, but if you want to put the logo on there, you go to the Paizo.com, and do you know what the exact URL is for that?
Go to the Starfinder, and there's a compatibility.
Go ahead.
Are they going to be able to have anything with it, like
at the show?
Release or
yeah, there's a couple of folks who are planning on doing things that are out right away. I will let them say who they are. I can't rattle off who they are off the top of my head, but I know like Frog God has got some stuff they're doing. I know that Legendary is going to be doing some stuff. There's a lot of different companies that are looking at doing some Starfinder stuff. And then I think also there's a fair number of people who are like, well, let's see if it's popular, you know. And Gen Con events are sold out. So we'll see. Hopefully people enjoy it and it becomes a big brand. I mean, basically my take on it is... I've been involved in RPGs either as a player or professionally since the early 80s, and there's never really been, in my view, a successful, multi-year lasting fantasy RPG that isn't tied to a big license like Star Wars or something. There have been a few that have lasted 2-3 years, science fiction. This is science fantasy, so it's got spells and magic and stuff. And I look at why that is, and part of it is I think a lot of those games have kind of died on the vine from lack of support. And so we are going into this like full pressure, right? Like we've got pawns, and we've got flip mats, and we've got an organized play program, we've got Adventure Path, we've got rule books coming out a couple of times a year. If it doesn't work for reasons other than we messed up somehow, like if we double printed a bunch of pages and it's a bad book and it doesn't make sense, I'm sure that won't happen. I don't know that it can, right? Like I feel like we're giving it the most honest try of a fully supported science fiction RPG
ever.
Maybe ever. Yeah. And so I'm kind of like, there are people in the industry who are like, well, science fiction doesn't work. It's not going to sell. And I'm like, well, we're going to find out. The response so far has been really positive. You know, people seem to be really excited about it. It's fresh, and it's new. We've been doing Pathfinder now for almost a decade, and we still love it, but getting to change gears and do like different challenges like spaceship combat and trying to answer questions about how do spells work in zero gravity and stuff like that is just a whole new bunch of challenges for us as well. It's been really invigorating to take that on.
I do want to add one thing, and that's we have some licensees too.
Yeah.
We have Lone Wolf's going to be doing with their Hero Labs, going to cover Starfinder on launch. Sirenscape's doing the sound sets. Fantasy Grounds will have Starfinder, I'm pretty sure, on launch, I think Doug said so.
And I mentioned the Ninja Division miniatures.
Miniatures. And everybody here speaks English, but we'll have it also in French and German and Italian pretty much on launch. So it's... you know, it's getting the full support, So like Eric said, I think, you know, I'm excited because, I mean, Starfinder was pitched to me as a book that might sell better than Bestiary 7, so.
that's the real metric, is will it sell better than Bestiary 7? Bestiary 6 is selling really well, so it's like,
thinking
actually,
this up. That was literally the pitch for it.
Yeah, that's,
I didn't think this book might sell better than the 7th Bestiary. So
I might have done that as a joke, but now, because of Bestiary 6's sales, I'm nervous.
Yeah, I know. That's doing well. So it'll be fun. It'll be fun, and I think, like Eric said, I think this will be the best shot anyone's ever given. You know, and I think Shadowrun's a great example of a game that took cyberpunk and fantasy and supported it really hard, and it did really well.
So. You know, and Shadowrun is a good example of a science fantasy game that has lasted a long time, and it's been well supported, especially in different parts of its life. But you know, it's Earthbound, and it's, you know, it's not shooting up into the stars and space opera, I guess, is what we're talking about. Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit and talk about Pathfinder. So I'm going to let Jason speak a little bit about Ultimate Wilderness.
Sure. Well, we just released Bestiary 6 and the Adventurer's Guide, which I'm sure you've all seen. The next big release, which will happen this fall, is Ultimate Wilderness. So, you know, we did, there's actually a book.
Yeah, I'll get to that one.
So Ultimate Wilderness is kind of us kind of rounding out the line, right? You know, we had Ultimate Combat, which gives you all the tips, tools, tricks to kind of give you more combat options. We had Ultimate Magic, gives you more spells. Ultimate Equipment, gives you all the gear. Ultimate Intrigue kind of covers a lot of our skill-based characters and social-based characters, and we were like, what's missing? What haven't we done? And we're like, well, the nature-based characters don't really have a book that speaks directly to them. So Ultimate Wilderness was kind of born out of us saying, you know, druids and rangers, they could use some love. So the book is filled with, you know, kind of what you would expect, right? There's more feats, there's more spells, there's more archetypes for all the nature-based classes. But there's also, as in the previous Ultimate books, there's a new class. So the Shifter is the new class in Ultimate Wilderness. The Shifter is, and you mentioned this last night, the Shifter is to, our design remit was to make, the Shifter is to the druid as the paladin is to the cleric. So it's like the militant arm of nature's defense, right? The Shifter is the one who will go out there and beat you up. They use the power of nature to defend nature with claws and teeth. The class picks like animal features, traits that they can then apply to themselves on a pretty regular basis to give them various bonuses, abilities, you know, see in the dark or... all of them get to grow claws, but some are able to get a bite and get other sorts of attacks. And then as they go up in level, they can even start changing into the shapes of the animals that they have the aspects of. The class is divine-based. It doesn't get spells, but it does have a full base attack bonus, so it's a martial class. So, now what else is in that book? Oh, yeah, we have a huge chapter on... animal companions and familiars, right? We wanted to give them some more options as well. So there's feats and spells and abilities that speak specifically to your character's animal companions. And there's even a couple archetypes that allow classes that don't normally get animals to find a way to get their own pet. So there's some fun stuff. Ultimate Wilderness, I think, will find a nice home in most people's collection, hope you guys kind of expand out some of your nature-based characters.
And a couple of months before that, we are putting out a Book of the Damned. So the Book of the Damned is a updated collection of three of our out-of-print books. We've done a Book of the Damned for Devils, we've done a Book of the Damned for Demons, and we've done a Book of the Damned for Daemons. All of them have been out of print for quite some time, so we wanted to bring those together in a way that would allow people to get that information. While we're at it, we wanted to add a bunch of new stuff as well. So it's a bit of a compilation, sort of a reprint, but with new material added to it. And it's reprinting material from a different product line. So so if you have those books, you're going to find some new stuff in here for sure. You're going to we've added significantly to the list of demon lords and all the horsemen of the apocalypse are in there, and a bunch of the archdevils are in there as well. Jacobs sort of redeveloped the entire book and added a whole bunch of new stuff. And one of the things that he added was we finally have a Pathfinder version of the Demon Lord Orcus, which is pretty cool, and Jubilix, who are both... What's that?
So slimy.
Yeah, and they both were originally added to the OGL in the old Tome of Horrors book, and we didn't really focus too much on them because they both have significant history with this other role-playing game that you guys might have heard of. And but James was like, no, they're part of the OGL stuff. I really want to kind of show the Pathfinder version, so indeed we've done that. And they're different, but they're pretty cool. That one is 288 pages, so it's a pretty significant size book. It's got a new cover by Wayne Reynolds. It's beautiful, and I think it's one of our best illustrated books ever, actually. It's really, really nice. I was just thrilled to flip through it while we were doing our final sign-offs before it went to the printer, and then finally got to look at the whole book as a thing at one time, and it was great. So that comes out in September. And Ultimate Wilderness comes out in November.
I want to quickly add one thing about the Book of the Damned. Is when we were doing the approvals, I was sitting with some of the editors who were doing going through their passes, and I heard them say, you know, when I was editing this, I almost felt like dirty because it was so evil. But you know, I had to go clean my thoughts and because it's the Book of the Damned. I mean, it's got some really crazy stuff in there, and the pictures are just insane. Really, just kind of show you what evil can do.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah. I love it.
Okay, so in between those two books, in October, we're also going to be releasing two more pocket edition paperback versions of some of our most popular titles, and that will be Ultimate Equipment and Bestiary 2. I announced at the banquet last night that we will do a couple more of them. We're going to be doing Bestiary 3 and the Advanced Class Guide in January of 2018, and then we're going to do many, many more of those throughout the year because they've been selling really well. People seem to really appreciate the smaller size, lower price point, you know, so we'll continue to do those as long as you guys keep buying them. So look for those every 3 months or so. We'll release some more soft covers. The Pathfinder Pawns line continues largely on the same scale and rate that it was before. So, you know, upcoming pawn sets include the Strange Eons Pawn Collection, which comes out this month, the Heroes and Villains Pawn Collection, which is just a general collection of cool NPCs, and then we've got a really interesting one coming out later in the year. It says September on my schedule, but I think it's actually going to be a little bit later because we had to tinker with it a bit to get it perfect, but it's the Traps and Treasures Pawn Collection. So one of the things that's interesting about the Traps and Treasures Pawn Collection is, unlike previous pawn sets, this one includes some pawns that are meant to be laid on the ground, so or on the flip mat. So we've got like pits and like buzzsaw traps and like chests and some of them that stand up, like really awesome doors and pillars and like weird demon face portals and all kinds of fun stuff to really kind of add more three-dimensionality to your game. After that, we've got Iron Fang Invasion Pawn Collection and Bestiary 6 Pawn Box that will be coming in February. So a little bit of experimentation in form on that line, but in terms of what we're doing, it's largely similar to what we've done in the past. I want to talk a little bit about Pathfinder Adventure Path because I think that this year and into next year are quite interesting. We're finishing up the Iron Fang Invasion right now, and that is runs through July. Crystal Fraser has been putting together a really kick-ass campaign set in Nirmathos, and it involves invasions with hobgoblins, and it's like a war, sort of a backdrop of war. And that's something people have been requesting for a long time. And the early issues have gotten good reviews. And the art, again, is really, really cool. So Iron Fang Invasion is one I'm pretty excited about. And I'm also excited about it because, coincidentally, and having really nothing to do with the Iron Fang Invasion, technically, Nir Mythos is where my weekly Pathfinder campaign takes place. And this bum right here is my GM for my weekly Pathfinder campaign. So
I haven't killed you yet.
Nope, you have not. And so so it's cool to explore Nir Mythos a little bit more. After the Iron Fang Invasion, Adam Daigle is spearheading the Ruins of Aslant adventure path, and that starts in August of this year. Because we're putting so much focus on science fantasy and science fiction with Starfinder, we wanted to make sure that there was plenty of just kind of straight-up awesome classic fantasy, you know, coming out with Pathfinder as well. Because as exciting as Starfinder is, we know that maybe not everybody's going to want to jump on a spaceship right away. And so we've been, over the last couple of years, doing some kind of experimentation with Strange Eons. It was kind of a Lovecraftian thing. Prior to that, we did the Hell's Rebels and Hell's Vengeance, which was like a full year of a kind of a good campaign and then an evil campaign set in the same country. And so we wanted to kind of get back and do just kind of some straight-up fantasy. So Ruins of Aslant involves exploration of the sunken continent of Aslant, which is sort of our Atlantis stand-in. So you're going to be, you know, fighting off weird cults and immortal enemies from ancient times. We're going to be revealing more about Aslant than we ever have before. Basically, you go out to help establish a colony, and hilarity and hijinks ensue from that point forward. So that's Ruins of Aslant. That goes from August to January of 2018. And then in February is the War for the Crown. War for the Crown is an adventure path that we've been putting a lot of thought and effort into, even above and beyond, I think, normal, because, again, it's coming out just right up into the run-up to Starfinder, and it is really cool. It's not just sort of classic fantasy. It also takes espionage and sort of like James Bond meets Game of Thrones. So essentially what you're doing is the nation of Tal'Dor, the king goes away, and now there's a question of who is going to ascend to the throne. And there are multiple claimants to the throne, one of which is the Princess Eutropia, who is the daughter of Grand Prince Stavian III, the foppish, weak-chinned, inbred current leader of that country. She is hopefully a breath of fresh air for Tal'Dor and its people, but there are a lot of people who are willing to engage in some skullduggery to make sure that doesn't go off the way you as the player characters want it to. So you act as her agents, and you're kind of trying to secure her place in a very contested throne. And in doing so, you'll be investigating lots of secrets about Tal'Dor, many of which were kept intentionally secret by the leadership there. They have some skeletons in their closet, perhaps. And at the end of it, if you're successful, you can install this this new leader in Tal'Dor. Tal'Dor has been an important country for us from the very beginning. It was one of the five first factions for the Pathfinder Society organized play. It's one of the oldest human kingdoms in the setting. It's so important that in the world, the common language is the language of Tal'Dor. It's called Tal'Dane. And it was one of the main kingdoms. And of the oldest surviving kingdoms in Galarian, it's the one that is most like sort of straight up Pathfinder. You know, it's a fantasy kingdom. And we're going to be, in addition to playing through the storyline in the adventure path, the ramifications of that storyline and little side quests from that storyline are going to play out in the Pathfinder Society organized play as well. So there's a lot of people, the old Tal'Dor faction, the current Sovereign Court faction, that's going to be very heavily tied in with War of the Crown. Not in a way that you absolutely need to be following the adventure path to understand what's going on in the campaign, but in a way that will really complement your play experience if you do both. War for the Crown, and that goes through July of 2018. Okay, so let's see, what else? Pathfinder campaign setting. We, in 2017, have, let's see, we've got Aquatic Adventures coming out in June. That kind of dovetails with the Ruins of Azlanth campaign. At least one of those adventures takes place in a sunken city, and that's just a huge, you know, a huge portion of our world and Galarian are covered in water, so we might as well show how to do fun adventures down there. And there's a lot of really, like, major menaces, like the Aboleths who live under the oceans, and we wanted to focus some on them, the Sahuagins, our friends at the Grindylows, for those of you who played Skull and Shackles, you probably remember the little aquatic goblins. I'm sure they'll make an appearance. We've got Iron Fang Invasion poster map folio coming out in July. Then we've got a little bit of a break as we prepare for some of this other crazy stuff we're doing. And then in November, we've got the Construct Builder's Guidebook, which is kind of a way to build your own golems and homunculi and fun stuff like that. And then in December, we have Taldor, the First Empire, which is a setting book leading into the War for the Crown. Following up with that is Ruins of Azlanth map folio, and then we'll get back to regular paced campaign settings, none of which have been announced because I don't know which ones we're doing in which months yet. So, let's see where else we are. I'm just going to keep rattling through my script. I'll just read it aloud if you'd like. Player Companions, monthly releases all the way up through early 2018 and beyond. A couple of highlights from that list. We've got Legacy of the First World, which just came out. Following up with that is a sequel to probably the best-selling player companion we've ever done, which was Adventurer's Armory, which is a big equipment guidebook. So this has the very creative title, Adventurer's Armory 2.
Revenge of the Armory.
Now we've got Blood of the Sea, which is the kind of, again, a companion piece to Aquatic Adventures and Ruins of Azlanth. So it's, you know, if you've got blood or if you've got heritage that goes back to some of the ocean-dwelling folk in our setting, this is going to tell you how to play those characters. We have the Elemental Master's Handbook, which has got all kinds of stuff about, you know, the elements and how to master them.
How about huge ones? Huge ones too?
Huge ones, yep. We're going to be putting out, as you saw at the banquet, we're going to be doing some huge elementals in an upcoming miniature set called Maze of Death that comes out in the spring. And we're going to do air and water elementals. I wish I had my presentation here because I could do the whole thing where I jump up and point at the screen. I was really excited when I got the approval sheet for that because the water elemental in particular, you know, it's going to be like this big. And it's got a couple of drowned people like inside the clear plastic just kind of floating there. So it's a nice preview of the fate of your player characters to come when you plop that thing down on the table. Just a couple more things in Player Companion line. We've got the Anti-Heroes Handbook. A lot of people like to play sort of the bad good guys, you know, and this is really gonna give you a lot of tips and tricks to make that happen. We've got Blood of the Coven, which is going to focus a lot on changelings and hags. A lot of stuff for witches in that book. We've got People of the Wastes, which is a lot of, like, desert lands and blasted places like the Mana Wastes. Overviews of some of those locations, and then game rules if your character's from a wasteland. And then last one in 2017 is Potions and Poisons, and it's going to be all about
poisons and potions.
Yes. We did the brainstorm for that a couple of weeks ago, and lots of cool ideas. You know, there's lots of ideas about elixirs. There's ideas about mixing potions and what, you know, that might do.
Oh wait, a miscibility table.
Did we include a miscibility table?
Can we get a miscibility table, please?
Well,
it came up in the
brainstorm. Let's just say that. Whether it makes it in the book or not, I can't say.
I remember that from Dungeon.
Yes. So we're doing that, and then January, a player companion that we just announced, I'm really excited about. It's called Disciples Doctrine, and what that is we've done, you know, Intersea Gods, and we've done Intersea Fates, And this one is about like belief systems that aren't necessarily tied to God. So we've got the prophecies of Calistrade, which is the nation of Druma. They have like this aristocracy of super rich merchant people who have weird food prohibitions and taboos against physical contact, so they wear like full-length white gloves, and they're kind of weird and crazy. And when Jason and I were building the bulk of the setting, you know, we're filling in areas around Lake Incarthen, and I'll take the blame, I guess.
That's all you.
And I was like, I think we should have this this messed up merchant nation, and like, let's make them super weird, and let's make them follow like this religion of like, let's call them prophets, you know, like. Profits of that's clever, but since then, that's one of the countries that just hasn't gotten a lot of development for whatever reason. Weird merchants aren't quite as exciting as I'd hoped, maybe.
And so, let's go kill a merchant.
I'm in the meeting recently, and so, and perhaps because Druma is a little bit unloved, some of the Pathfinder Society folks, particularly John Compton, who is our Pathfinder Society lead developer, they have a group of Pathfinder agents from Druma that they call the Druma Lodge, and they usually come out at like, you know, midnight slots and stuff when they're punch drunk, and it's just like they've got this hilarious approach to it, and but I thought it was mostly just like for funsies at conventions and stuff, and then he came up to me one day and told me like, here's what I've been doing with Druma, and I was blown away because it's so cool. John Compton has such great ideas about this country that like all I did was birth it into the world and then abandon it like some kind of bad parent, you know. And John is just like, oh little one, I will take you in, and like he's like, so I don't want to give too much away, but it's like their food prohibitions like involve ingesting trace amounts of precious metals and stuff and kind of like embalming themselves as they're alive with like weird
now I do want to kill them
metals.
And their bodies work.
Yeah, and like so they get more, you know, inculcated into this cult, they become like living treasure in a way, and they almost like are these like semi-undead. It's like so awesome. I'm not doing it justice, but that'll be covered in Disciples Doctrine. We've got some other ones too. We're going to be doing the Order of the Palatine Eye, which has shown up a few times in Strange Eons and in Carrying Crown. That's Brandon Hodge has done most of the development on that. That's kind of like a Masonic, you know, sort of an organization, secret society. I can't remember what the other societies were putting in there, but
Whispering Way.
No, Whispering Way is not in there. But
Knights of Ozum,
no. You know what? I don't.
They're too awesome.
Jason, why don't you talk for a little bit while I look at my photographs of whiteboards on my screen, and I'll tell you which groups are in there.
What?
Just, you know, talk about life. Jeez, you're doing really sucking at this.
Yeah, no, I know. It's like, well, I don't know. My headspace is all in the UK for next week.
Here is.
I failed you. Sorry. I'm leaving you hanging here.
See, you have to learn how to do this. Like when, like musicians change, you know, tune
yeah,
their guitar.
Yeah, wasn't expecting.
They learn pattern while they're looking tune their guitar. You need to learn pattern while you're looking at whiteboards. You're gonna put that on your review.
All right, here's what. I'll just read off the list that of our brainstorm. So some of these will be in there and some of them won't. But this is just a glimpse into how crazy our ideas are. So many of these will be covered in this book. Order of the Palatine Eye, something called the Cult of the Eye that I don't even know what that is. Prophecies of Calistrade, Temple of Law, the God Claw, which is part of the Hell Knights. The Harbingers of Fate, which are all about trying to re-piece together lost prophecies in a world where prophecy doesn't work much anymore. Oh yeah, the Rivethun, which is the Dwarven shamanic tradition that we introduced with the write-up of the shaman,
yeah.
Iconic character. We want to talk a little bit about kami cults from Tian Sha, some of the Shawanti shamanic traditions, psychopomp cults. This is my favorite. Kaiju cults. Cults that are all about worshiping
I can't imagine
monsters.
Who came up with that.
different mystery cults that are pertain to oracle mysteries. The Concordance of Elements, which is an elemental group we've been working on. The Hero Gods of Iblidos, which are like Perseus and Hercules and stuff, who aren't quite, they don't grant spells, but they're not quite human. They are, in fact, mythic. Jason, you'll like this one. Were you in this brainstorm?
No, I missed this
okay,
one.
Okay, so this one's right for you. The Failed Test of the Starstone.
Oh, I love
candidates.
Those guys. We'll go up to 16 poses.
Yes, there's a whole... That's three.
I can't show you all.
I thought you were walking like an Egyptian there.
It's similar, to be honest.
Yeah. So there's a whole church like right or a building right outside
the shrine of the failed.
Yes,
yeah.
Where all the idiots who tried to take the test of the Starstone and become a god and failed still have like little shrines where their poor followers
my,
can come and be like, "How come you haven't given me spells?"
My favorite is how most of them don't even make it to the cathedral itself, they just fall in the pit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we want to talk a little bit about various saints of Galarian. Here's another one. I don't think we're actually going to do this in this book because I think we're going to do it somewhere else, but Razmir.
Oh, hell.
Yeah. James is quite interested. So, there's this thing that's like, in the subtext of a lot of Galarian stuff called the pattern, which is something that like serial killers kind of tap into. And there's a serial killer from Sandpoint we actually fought in his ghost in the campaign a long time ago. So he wants to talk a little bit about that.
Sandpoint's real estate market must suck.
Yeah, no,
it's a guy's called Chopper.
That's right.
He's in the adventure card game, man.
No, he has Pillbug.
Pillbug
is
Hotaker. I think we killed him too.
We're
let's
adventurers.
See.
We kill things.
So that's it. I mean, there's a couple other ideas, but they're bad. So, some combination of that stuff is not true. some combination of that stuff is going to appear in the Disciples Doctrine. So it gives us an opportunity to kind of like. Explore some of the smaller ideas and like some of the more niche weird stuff to get beyond the actual gods. So that's Player Companion. Then let's see. Don't want to talk about that. And then we got map packs, flip mats every other month. Just quickly rattle off those. We've got Airship just came out, flip mat Airship. Then we've got a bigger Caverns flip mat, the bigger size allows for bigger battles. This one's got caverns
it's a
on
bigger,
it.
Bigger
yeah,
cavern.
Yeah,
yeah,
bigger caverns.
That's right.
The underground stuff generally does pretty well. A lot of people like that. There's obviously a lot of adventures take place in caves and things, and so this is going to have a couple of different cave systems. We've got a map pack called Ruined Village coming out. We have the Flipmat Arcane Library in July, followed in August by map pack Village Sites, Flipmat Haunted House, Flipmat Bigger Keep, Flipmat Sunken City, and map pack Fungus Forest, and then one called Frozen Sites, which map pack, which is all wintry stuff. And then in July, we just announced a Flipmat Dungeon, January, Flipmat Dungeon Multipack. So that's like the basic multipack we've done with a couple of different, I think there's three Flipmats in it, or at least in this one, I think there's three, and they're in the Elemental Planes. You know what, I think there's two, now that I'm saying it. So you get a couple of different ones, so four different dungeons in one pack, and they'll be all new, original dungeons. The dungeon ones... People just love those. They keep selling really well, so we keep making them. I think at this stage, we probably, if you count the Emerald Spire, I bet we've done 30 different dungeon formats, maybe. So you could just build, like, you could never leave the dungeon, ever.
Ever.
Which would be rad. I have not yet talked about the Adventure Card Game. And so I'm happy to do so. Or Vic, if you'd like to be a cameo star of this of this panel, you're more than welcome.
Well, sure.
All right.
I mentioned the banquet. We're not doing a new adventure path for a while because we're kind of looking at reevaluating what that means. Is this a 1 hour slot or a 2 hour slot?
One. This is a one, okay. So yeah, we're running short. Yeah.
If you want to know more about why we're not doing a new base set anytime soon, details are online from my speech and banquet. But what we are doing is class decks. Between August and February, we have Magus, we have Pathfinder Tales, we have Hell's Vengeance 1 and 2, we have Hunter, and we have Occult Adventures 1 and 2 coming up.
Yep, so lots of cool, exciting characters coming for Pathfinder card game. And just for the benefit of those of you who weren't at the banquet, the idea that Vic alluded to is we're kind of looking at different changes in format, you know, of the how we release the base sets. While we tinker with that, we continue with the class decks, and there will be something. What did you say, earliest, probably Gen Con 2018, maybe into 2019?
Yeah.
And so.
Well, we will keep you entertained with organized play.
Yep.
So
yep.
We're doing from Gen Con to next PaizoCon will be the season of Faction's Favor.
Cool. So I did just look at my clock here, and
just
we have not much time, so I'd love to talk more about our licensed products and our computer games. A lot of that stuff is actually here at the show that you can check out, so I'll just start with some questions.
What about the Tales line?
Oh, that's a good question. Tales line's kind of on hiatus right now, honestly. So we shifted to a partnership with Tor Books, and they did for a couple of years. They did them, and we are now hunting for a different partner. So that relationship didn't really work out the way we wanted it to. I'm going immediately after this show to New York to Book Expo, which is the big book publishing show, and I've got some meetings with some folks, and there's a lot of people interested in taking it on. But until we sign a new partner, we're just kind of holding our inventory. And by that I mean we have like 6 books that we're ready to go. We are, you know, committed to the Pathfinder Tales line. We don't yet have a partner to work on with them. So look for those to return probably in 2018, but there's going to be a bit of a gap. In the meantime, if what you're looking for is stories set in the world of Pathfinder, our partners at Dynamite continue to do pretty awesome Pathfinder comic books. So I know a comic book is not the same as a novel, but if you hold like 8 of them in your hand at once, it might feel more like a novel. And we are working on solving that issue. So Gears of Fate, the new book that's out, is the last one for at least a little while. Question here.
So with the Book of the Dam, are you guys including obediences in that book?
Yes.
And have you ever thought about doing it for the Assyrian old gods as well?
Obediences for the Assyrian gods?
You can worship them. So.
No, that's an interesting idea, but no, I haven't, but that doesn't mean others haven't. The best source for that is probably that article in Mummy's Mask.
Yeah,
it has all that amazing art.
Yeah, no, it's great. They don't have any of that. Like, if you wanted to create a Crusader,
right,
Osiris,
right. I'll pass that on to write that down. That's a good idea.
Dovetailing with that, what about the Asian deities and the Cthulhu deities, obediences and things for them?
That's a good idea. How about
Miss
a hardcover
deities redeemed.
Anybody else want to give me a good idea for a product?
Ultimate deities.
Ultimate deities. Yeah. What?
The more Vudran deities.
Yeah. So Vudra's tough because Vudra's like, they have 1,000 gods. You know.
You make 10 books.
Yeah, 10
gods.
Oh, I thought you said we could make 10 bucks off of it. I guess that depends on the size of the book. That's interesting. So we want to get to Vudra eventually. I think that I'm kind of the opinion that until we've done a Jalmaray book, which is their outpost in the Inner Sea, that it's probably jumping ahead a little bit too far to be like, and here's their whole mother culture. So And that's also touchy, you know, for a couple of different reasons. It's like it's based on Vudra's kind of in the same way that, you know, Avastan is based on sort of European mythology and lore. You know, the idea is if you want to kind of have a credible Indian, you know, analog, you better find somebody who actually knows a lot about ancient India. And then you also got to keep in mind that the religion of ancient India is the current religion of a lot of Hindus. And so there's just certain sensitivities that you don't necessarily have the same way when you're like riffing on Odin or like even like Mesopotamian stuff. So it's just, it requires a delicate touch. And I want to make sure that we've got the right sort of expert, if you will, to put on that project. And unlike, you know, Lovecraft and pulp novels and old DC comic books, I don't necessarily have, like, a guy at the office who's like, yeah, the Mahabharata and the Vedic manuscripts. I mean, it's probably me, honestly, and I don't know. So that's a little scary. So, anyway, other questions? Suggestions?
Anything on tips?
Okay, I'm going to get you back there, then we'll take this Hermia question, and then I'll get you. So, yes, sir.
Do you have any more products coming out about the Darklands?
Products coming out about the Darklands? Yeah, we didn't we just do one? I get confused. Heroes of the Darklands in April was the most recent one. Do you have that? I think we're working on... No, the reason I'm kind of like going, is we've got a whole pile of ideas for books, but we're also realigning our schedule right now, so I have to kind of like plot books by when we can achieve them based on who's available to work. That's one of the reasons I'm not going too deep into the 2018 reveals in this. So I think that there is a Darklands book in the mix, but it's not on the schedule just yet. What kind of Darklands book would you like to see? Anything. Well, I can... Well, sir, I can accomplish that.
Darrow's grandmother. A story about the grandmother of the Darrow.
We do have...
you have a question about Hermia?
Yeah, anything.
No. and there's a real practical reason for that, or at least in the short term, and that when we made Galarian, so basically I was... sort of in a very broad brush essay when Jason and I were kind of building the campaign, but of course that's not how it really worked. We had James Jacobs and Wes Schneider and to some degree James Sutter working on Varisia, which was where the adventure path was happening. And while they were working on that, Jason and I were fleshing out the broad strokes of the rest of the world. And so I've told this story 1,000 times, and so if you've heard it before, this is a very, very short version. We also did a number of brainstorms among the creative team in like 2006, 2007. And it was all based around like what kind of campaigns do people like to play. People like, people like ancient Egypt. People like heavy political stuff. People like fighting demons, you know, all that. And so from that we came up with a list of like diabolical empire in decline, nation in revolution. And if you look at the old gazetteer, there's a little word, like a phrase under each country. And that's, in many cases, was the genesis of the idea. And then we built the countries themselves around that framework. And as we were doing that, and as after the gazetteer, and even while I was working on the gazetteer with Jason, mostly from what people were championing in brainstorms and stuff like that, different members of the staff became kind of the champions of different countries. And so Jason and I have a bunch of them because of the fact that we were doing it. But everybody at the company had at least one. And Hermia was James Sutter's country. And James Sutter is now the creative director of Starfinder and is really focusing on Starfinder. So I think a Hermia book, at least in the short term, is unlikely. But we're also getting to the point where there are, I think we've passed the midway point where there are more countries that have had books than countries that haven't. And so we'll get to everything eventually. Were you the, there was this guy, and then we'll come up. Yeah.
Someone over here too.
Oh, and then him. And we'll be here all day, guys. And by all day, I mean for the next 6 minutes.
Okay. Partly a question, partly a statement. With the Elementalist book you were working on, sorry, what was that again?
Elemental Master's Handbook.
Elemental Master's Handbook.
Yes.
Something that I would really love to see and I've been waiting for a long time is to see elemental spells that feel like they really have some special effects, like with their elements, fire, sets you on fire, ice spells that do...
I think the book, I haven't read this book yet, but I think it does have some of that stuff, where,
I've been waiting for that stuff for a long time, and I would really love to see some of that.
Haven't read it yet, I can't promise, but I think there is some stuff.
Okay.
And then we'll get you, and then we'll finish up with this gentleman here.
I was wondering, you've had, before you had APs that started in one place and ended in another culture, like Jade Region,
mm-hmm.
but what about an AP that'll actually start in another culture and the whole campaign is set there, like say in Jean-Marie,
yeah,
or something like that?
That'd be cool. I think, honestly, if we were going to do something like a Jean-Marie or a Voudra campaign, that's probably how we would do it. I think having done the Journey to the Place campaign, that was one of the kind of, like, criticisms, maybe too strong a word, but I think that there were a lot of people who said that was great, but it would be cool if we'd done the whole campaign and Tian Sha. And so I think if we were to do it again, we probably would do something more like that. I've got a pretty good idea of what the next several APs are, and there's not one like that in the near future, but that's something that we've thought about for sure. Quick question. Or not, whatever else.
No, actually.
Yeah.
I think as I've been watching Pazo, one of the greatest strengths it really brings to the table as a gaming company is its the strength of its branding.
Oh.
So I was wondering how do you go about maintaining that, and how do you go about expanding that?
That's a good question.
Okay, pause. What was your question?
Clerics, wizards, summon sorcerers, you came out recently with pawns for all the summon creatures.
Yeah.
But what I've been looking for years and years and years
uh-huh.
is just a deck of cards that have the stats for
me too, and we've looked into it, and they you know, you want them to be bigger
multiple
than a normal
packs.
Card. I'm thinking of like those things from the 70s from like the Wildlife Foundation. It's like it's a llama, and then you get the and we actually looked into that way long ago, like literally at the same time we were looking into item cards and game mastery, complete encounters and all that. And it was like, and literally we're like, oh right, we'd make no money on that whatsoever. But I have a feeling that the numbers that we were bidding out back in 2006 are significantly different than the numbers that we've been bidding out. So that's one that that's on my list of things to investigate, because I'd really like to do that.
It comes
I agree
up
that it's
every campaign, and it stops the table while you look for the stats for that monster.
That's a great idea. Okay, quickly, branding. I don't need to write that idea down because I'm literally working on that idea. So, how do we do it? I think that it helps to have people like Lisa and to some degree, God help me now, who have been in the industry for a long time and have seen some of the missteps that have happened. My background's in consumer public relations, so I'm into branding and stuff like that in general. But we have pretty tight controls over our licensing, I would say. Like, for example, the comic book. When we got a writer to launch a comic book, it was Jim Zub, who had been working with us for years on the magazines and who was like a personal friend. And when he left, it was me, Sutter, and Wes. So, you've got creative directors and editors-in-chief and publishers writing your material. That helps a lot. We're all obsessed with this, and we created it together.
I think that's actually one of the things that everybody from me on down loves and plays these games. A lot of companies, you have people that don't really, they work on brands and stuff, but they don't really like the brands, and that's not their thing. But we all live this, and the fact we have so many people that are so passionate about it, I think there's nearly not decisions that don't go by multiple people's too, to give them and get inputs and to get feedback on. So I think that's part of it, it kind of checks and balances in some ways.
And then in terms of how do we expand it, which was sort of the second part of your question, at least insofar as Pathfinder is concerned, one of the ways that we've tried to expand it is by reaching out to licensing partners who we really like and trust, because we've got a very full production schedule, but we don't make, with the exception of Pathfinder Online, we don't make computer games, for example. So, we want to reach out to computer game company is. We don't make comic books, and we don't make audio dramas, but some of our friends do, and some of the people that we know do, and then we have a tight approvals process through all that stuff, and probably in some ways you might argue too tight. I mean, when we do miniatures, we're doing our 14th set of Pathfinder Battles miniatures with Maze of Death that comes out in the spring, and when WizKids brings in their, like, what are called paint masters, which is like, this is what it's going to look like, it's not just the licensing guy who's in that meeting with them. It's not just the creative director for our line. It's not just the art director for our line. It's all of those people plus the entire executive team of the company. And part of that's just because it's fun. You know, I think there is an element
where it's
geeks.
Like, we want to see these things. Sorry.
But I'll tell you, part of it is because we are really, really detail-oriented people. And we want to use these figures and we want them to be as good as they possibly can be. So, you know, like, those things are put through their paces, man. There's no question about it. And I could imagine that there may have been a time or two where our partners at WizKids are like, are you serious? and then we just look at them with a steely-eyed gaze and we say, yes, we are serious. Fix that shoelace or whatever it is. So it's just obsessive-compulsive behavior.
So
the secret to our success in general.
Yeah.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. That's the bridge.
Thank you.
I hope to see you guys back next year here at the Doubletree. We'd love to have you. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to NoDirectionPodcast.com.